Hello, friends. Grab a chair, grab your wine. You are listening to the Close Friends podcast. This is where we hit record on our IRL conversations as friends about surviving, thriving, and diving headfirst into life as adults, but also trying to have a fucking good time. I am your co-host, Lucy, and I'm joined by Tara.
Hello, friends.
We do have a very incredible guest who I've been so excited to get on the podcast for so long now. She's actually in place of Sarah. So Sarah is, I think, probably asleep right now in California.
Very asleep.
Probably out somewhere. So she will not be joining us today. But Tara does have our close friend of the week.
Our close friend of the week has actually been submitted by Sarah. So she is here in spirit. She's the one that found message on the back of our Instagram account. So it says, "Hello guys, would just like to say thank you so much for creating this pod. Thanks to you guys, I'm going on a date tonight and for the first time in forever with the mindset of, I hope I like them instead of picking myself apart to make myself more desirable for them. And it's all down to you guys. This is incredibly empowering and I love it. Thank you."
Oh, I love that. Thank you. On to our guest. So I did ask our guest how she wanted to be described, because she does many wonderful things. But we have the amazing Africa Brooke with us on the podcast, consultant, coach, podcaster, and writer. I feel like there's so many things that we're going to delve into today. But I guess what would be great, Africa, if you could kind of introduce yourself, what you do, and maybe give us a little bit of your backstory into how you ended up doing what you do today.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you so much. Thank you for having me on your podcast. I've been really excited about this. I checked out what you do with your show, you know, and I can just feel that energetically some good things are going to come up. So I'm very excited, very, very, very excited. So in terms of what I'll do, I'll kind of try and condense everything and simplify it. But essentially, the two areas that I focus on in my consulting, in my coaching, in my work, I focus on self-sabotage, the concept of self-sabotage, which is, to put it very simply, when you get in your own way. I'm always very curious to understand, why do we do that? Why do we find ourselves in these kind of debilitating cycles? Maybe when we're getting very close to getting something that we want, we just pull the plug for some reason, right? We find ourselves procrastinating on the very thing that we know is going to move us forward the most. So I'm very curious about why we sabotage ourselves, which is something that I view as a form of self-protection anyway. And I think when you view it that way, it allows you to remove a bit of pressure from yourself. So that's one of my areas of focus. And my other one is self-censorship. Again, it stems from me just being very curious about human behavior. And it started with me wanting to understand my own behavior in relation to alcohol. Some people listening to this might or might not be familiar with my story, but I have been sober now for 5 years. And I didn't just try one time to get sober and then it was done. I tried so many times and I relapsed 7 times specifically. And then in 2016, what was different about that time is that I just started to get curious about what my behavior had been, what my relationship with alcohol was, which is what led me on the path of wanting to understand just how the brain works, why we do the things we do, how shame works, how guilt works, and how all of those things manifest. So fast forward to the present day, I now look at those two pillars of self-sabotage and self-censorship through a cultural lens. So in my private practice, I still work with individuals, but what I do publicly through my podcast and through my work and how you might have found me, I'm starting to look at those concepts through the cultural lens. So that's kind of like a simplified version of what I do.
That's amazing. I mean, I can't remember when I first came across your work, Africa. It might have been a couple of years ago. But I just feel like you've really like taken me on this journey, at least personally, from, I guess, to bring it to the work that I do specifically around fitness. And there's so many cultures and identities within fitness, your anti-diet or your, you know, diet culture and all these labels. And I found that so hard to navigate and find my place within that. So I think even if it's not just business, it's like who you are as a person as well. These labels that we get kind of thrown onto you, you feel like you then have to perform to be that part of that crew still. So I guess what was the turning point for you personally where you were like, I no longer want to join these camps and kind of find the strength to kind of be like, actually, I'm going to be free thinking for myself now. What kind of gave you the confidence to do that?
I would say that my sobriety is really the foundation of that, because I only started to really understand the concept of identity through my sobriety, which of course then took me on a journey to look at other aspects of it, whether it's my race, whether it's my gender, whether it's my sexuality. But what I realized about my relapses and why I was able to maintain sobriety this time, and it might sound really simple, but it was very profound. I stopped identifying as a drinker. Again, it sounds quite obvious, but all of the other times that I had tried to get sober, I was strategizing in a way that would prevent me from drinking. But in my mind, I was still a drinker. That's the one thing that I wanted the most. I just wanted to be a party girl again, another identity label that I wore very well for a long time. I was so attached to that identity and everything that came with it, that even though I was trying all of these strategies and I did maintain sobriety for maybe 6 months, another time 3 months, another time 2 months, I still over-identified with being a drinker. But in 2016, when I tried one more time, 5 years ago now, it was almost like a mindset shift that had to happen. I just wasn't a drinker anymore. And because I'm not a drinker, these are the behaviors and characteristics of the person that does not drink alcohol. And then I had to embody those things. So that's when I first learned of the importance of identity. And that led me to start looking at other things over time. And, you know, I had realized that in terms of my race, for example, from a young age, when I was in school, because I enjoyed certain types of music and just enjoyed certain types of things, and some people would call them white. And that always confused me so much, because how can music or how can a hobby be attached to race? I didn't quite understand it. But once I got older and I realized how identity works through my sobriety, I was able to go back into my past and realize that, oh my goodness, identity is much more powerful than we think. You know, to come to the point where we think you can't engage in a hobby or you can't engage in a certain type of music or something because of your race. So with everything that has been happening specifically in the past 2 years, I would say, where I have seen it, where there's been a huge cultural shift, where identity, everyone, most people are in a place of really questioning who they are. But then with that, it starts, I noticed that people are now starting to question who other people are. So there's what I call a collective identity crisis. So people are wearing now more labels than ever. But actually, for most people, it's not really working anymore. It's causing further confusion. So, yeah, I mean, there's so much that I've just put forward there. But again, I would say my sobriety was the first point that I started to look at identity in a bit of a different way.
It's really interesting because, I mean, I completely agree that we label ourselves and other people in all these different ways, and it's bullshit. It's all this big societal construct of, like, you have to be this, that, and the other, and you can't be this and this, and it's all just silly. But, like, how do we break away from that? Like, what is the first step to being, okay, this is just me and who I am, and I can be all of these different things and I don't have to label them, and I'm also always growing. Like, what do you do to bring that out in yourself?
Yeah, that's a very good question. And I would also love to know what you both think, but here's the thing. I think it's very easy to go into either or thinking, even when someone might be listening to me say this, they might think that I think all labels are bad, or that, you know, identity, we shouldn't be focusing on it. But actually, that's not the case. I think identity markers can be very important. Me being Black is a big part of who I am and how I am perceived in the world. And it allows me to connect with people that are similar to me, especially because I'm in the Western world where we are a minority. Me being a woman that label is important because it allows me, again, to build community with other women and to feel a deep sense of connection. You know, me being, and any other label that I choose to wear, right? Even, you know, when someone says, what do you do? And then I tell them I'm a consultant, I'm a coach, et cetera. It allows people to understand me. So I think labels are very useful because we need to make sense of ourselves and we need to make sense of the world and each other. But I guess I just wonder, and wonder is really the word that I would emphasize because I'm just in a place of curiosity all the time. I just think it's up to the individual to look at, is this working for me or is this not really working for me? Does something need to shift a little bit? Am I over-identifying with this part of myself to a point where it's actually restricting me from feeling full? You know, I think it's up to the individual first and foremost to just question, right? Not in a way where you're pathologizing and making everything abnormal, but just realizing that sometimes the human experience doesn't need all of these labels, right? So I can use my sexuality as an example. I've always identified as straight if I have to, right? But it's not something that I think about. And at the same time, I'm attracted to women and I've been with women, but I personally wouldn't refer to myself as bisexual. I don't think I need to. And even being straight, I don't think I need to. I just like who I like. And that's just how it is. And that's part of what makes my own personal experience feel richer because I don't need to make it mean something specific. It just is. Whereas there are some people and so many people I know who need that label because it allows them to make sense of their own experience and it makes them feel fulfilled. And I completely get that. So I think it's not a one size fits all. It's you, the individual. You're an autonomous being that gets to decide whether it's working for you or not. And you also get to reject the labels that people put onto you that you know are not tied to your sense of self. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of where I'm at with it.
I love that. And as you were saying that, Afrika, I was thinking it's almost like the difference between like a category versus like tags, where you can add loads of different tags, but you're not in one set category where you have to stay. You can just keep adding stuff. And it's kind of like, because as I was thinking that, I was like, God, when you do join these categories, because I've done it, you know, when I started learning about feminism, I very much felt like feminism had to be this one set thing. And I had to agree with everything that other feminists within my kind of sphere of it, we all had to think the same and do the same thing. And I think until I actually realized, hang on a second, what do I think? That was when I really, but then there's also that sense of shame. Like you're actually afraid. You're afraid to express that you might have a different opinion to someone else in your camp. And that's really terrifying. And I guess a lot of it boils down to is just the feeling of wanting to like belong with a group and being afraid to kind of think independently within that.
Where does it go too far? And Tara, I would love to know what you think in terms of that.
I've just been thinking about what you've been saying about identity and about how labels aren't always bad. And I want to take that slightly further and say that actually I think labels can sometimes be empowering and it depends on how you look at it. And an example for myself is that when I started pole dancing, I was always obviously really afraid to tell anybody that I was pole dancing because it felt like this shameful thing at the time, right? And I thought, how are people going to receive this? And I was in this state of like absolutely loving what I was doing. It was just the best, most empowering thing. But I was worried about how other people would perceive the label. And it was the journey of thinking, actually, I don't care anymore, and really embodying that label of I am a pole dancer. Do I give a shit whether you think I'm a stripper or not? No, like this is who I am now, and I've really grew into that label. And I think that's a really positive thing, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe it's about your perception of labels and how sort of deeply you've thought about it.
Exactly. And at the same time, the way in which I speak about labels as well publicly is just, as we're doing right now, just asking people to be a little bit more curious. And that's a word you will hear me say a few times, because I really think curiosity is something that is missing in our society right now, where we're just curious about each other instead of making an enemy of ourselves and each other. Just to be curious, if something is a little bit different, say, okay, I wonder why you think that way. And this is not me saying that you have to engage with people you really don't want to engage with. It doesn't mean that you put yourself in harm's way, but we also need to be able to discern, is this perceived harm or actual harm, right? Because to label anything that is, you know, causes discomfort as harm, does that actually help you engage with the very real world that you have to live in? I don't know. I don't think it does. And it doesn't mean you have to be boundaryless. No, actually, it means you have strong internal boundaries because you know that you're able to handle slight discomfort that might potentially help you to grow, right? So I think there's nuance in so many of these things, and labels is one of those areas where I just encourage people to just question it and ask yourself, consult yourself and say, is this working for me? And can I actually exist in the world without necessarily applying a label to every single experience that I have?
I love that.
And Lucy, what you said about feminism is just, I mean, like the label feminist is probably, or in, at least in my world, like the one of the weirdest labels, because some people are so like, you know, if you speak to some people and you say you're not a feminist, they will completely just switch off immediately and think you are like the devil, right? But then some people think feminists are the scum of the earth, and it literally just like, it's the, everyone's got this complete, there's this big range of different opinions you can have about being a feminist. And it's really interesting. I think the more that I think about that one, the more that I don't really know where I stand on it even anymore.
Yeah. And you know, I wonder what you both think about this as well, because I'm always really curious to know what other people really think. However, because we are in the age of self-censorship, people feel afraid to say, this is what I think, or they'll wait until they're kind of behind closed doors to say, this is what I think, or to say, actually, I don't quite understand that, or I just don't agree, or I don't have an opinion on this. And feminism is 100% one of those areas where people are like, it seems like it's, again, it's approached in a very binary kind of way, almost like you're either with us or against us, as if there's no gray area. Mm-hmm. And what I was coming to is that there's a huge cultural component that people just seem to miss out. So I remember when I had my sexual wellness company a few years ago, Cherry Revolution, where, you know, I'm a serious advocate about women's sexual pleasure, and I've been talking about it for years, and I started a company around that and had quite a big brand. But immediately it was labeled as a feminist brand. I didn't fucking say it was a feminist brand, but it was immediately labeled as that, and I found it very interesting, and I didn't have a problem with that at all. It made sense to me why it would get kind of branded as such. But when I revealed that I didn't attach myself to the label feminist, I remember some people being very I laugh because I think it's ridiculous personally.
Yeah.
You know, because are you going to disregard my message and everything that I actually do and the real work that I'm committed to doing in the real world because I don't associate myself with that label? Do you take a moment to ask yourself, am I even from the Western world? No, I was born and raised in Zimbabwe, where that label is non-existent. We might have a similar wording to talk about women that have stood up for women's rights and equality, but the word feminist is not part of my culture. It's not part of my language, even though my ancestors have done all of the work that here in the West feminists would have done. So because that word is not part of my culture, I won't associate myself with it, and I won't dismiss it or vilify it. It's just not a word that I need to be able to do the work that I need to do, which will align with feminist values. But that was another moment, again, a collection of incidents that shows me, oh my goodness, people are more attached to the label than what I'm actually doing. So if I say I'm a feminist, do you just feel better, even though I might not be, but it makes you feel better that I'm saying I am? So it's so bizarre.
It's almost like, because then you're performing, like whether you're like, because when you introduce, like I remember my friend, we were playing this like drinking game once, and we had to like call it like labels to each other once, and she like pointed me and she was like, she's a hardcore feminist. And I guess for me, I do identify with the label of feminist personally, but only with the weight that I apply to it, my own personal choice. Like, I don't, like, you know, I don't personally feel like pressured, I guess. I don't personally feel pressured by other people around, you need to do this to be a feminist and to call yourself feminist. Because I think I've kind of moved to a space with your work and the amazing stuff that you've been doing, Africa. I don't feel that weight on social media as much. But I also, like, when you were speaking and you were talking about, you know, sitting uncomfortably with other people's opinions, what is your thoughts on the advice, which I say all the time, but now I kind of second guess it in that, you know, delete and unfollow and block people that you don't, you know, that trigger you or make you feel upset. I really want to know your thoughts on that advice.
Again, I think there's two ways of looking at this. I don't think it's an either or situation, like with everything, right? I think everything, most things anyway, start very, very internally. You need to know yourself, which is why I encourage people, instead of just fucking shouting on the internet, work on your self-awareness. I think that's a good place to start, right? And I say that because when you work on your self-awareness enough and you truly understand how you respond to things, how you're able to regulate your emotions, how you're able to just watch your thoughts and just listen to what's happening internally, it means that externally, you know how to react. So that's why there's no one kind of answer in terms of, oh, just block people. You need to understand what's happening internally. Why do you feel uncomfortable? And if you're going to block and unfollow that person, is it because it's a boundary that's coming from a healthy place? Because I think that's important. We're made to think that just because it's the internet, you're not allowed to have boundaries, right? You're allowed to limit comments if you want to. You're allowed to unfollow people. You're allowed to be very intentional about the space in which you create. And if you're going to be doing that, it's important to make sure that you're not creating a really tight echo chamber, right? Because when you create a really tight echo chamber, that means you're just surrounded by people who agree with the way that you think, people who would just say yes, people who will pretty much just entertain anything that you think is worthy of entertaining. And anytime something comes, enters that space that will make you feel conflicted in some kind of way or uncomfortable, you will see it as the enemy. And maybe your default is to just block and to unfollow. And I think that, again, it doesn't help you navigate the real world, because in the real world, you can't do that. You have to encounter people you don't agree with. That's why we're seeing a huge rise, especially in young people, where they're struggling to communicate, because they spend most of their times online in their echo chambers, in their spaces, that in the real world, they're not able to make sense of the fact that, oh my goodness, people actually think like this. There are people that don't know this terminology. You know, it can feel like a completely different world, especially with terminology.
I love your thoughts on terminology. You crack it on your stories. Like, what was it? It was low. Like, I think obviously the word normalize, I use it all the time. Like, I do it now. Like, I've lost the meaning now of it. But yeah, I guess there's so many buzzwords, isn't there now?
Yeah, there's so many. And again, it's one of those things where, does it translate into your real life? So when it comes to blocking, etc., I think, again, you're an autonomous individual. You get to do what you want. And at the same time, I think it's important to just get curious about why and where that's coming from. Is it because you're trying to block out anything that makes you feel uncomfortable, anything and everything, even if it could potentially help you, you know, expand your worldview, shift your beliefs in some way that's supportive, you learn new information, you know, see debates and conversations with people that you really don't agree with, but it's actually going to help you communicate in a better way, right? Yeah, I think healthy discomfort is really important, but if we're just blocking and unfollowing at the first sign of discomfort, I don't think that's useful. Yeah. I don't.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think the healthy part is really important, and it's all about the journey to it. You can't just say, okay, right, I've just listened to what you've said, I'm gonna go and follow a load of accounts that I think are really wrong or something like that, and then here we go, I'm now not in an echo chamber anymore. Do not do that. I've tried that, it doesn't work.
Really? Can you share about your journey with that?
Well, it was my mum that did it first. So she'd found something. I can't remember how this even came up, but I was like, why are you following that person? And she was like, well, I just want to see what they're doing because it's interesting and it's important. And I thought, wow, you're braver than I am because I don't think I could do that. And then slowly but surely, I'd come across some accounts where I thought, you know what, I don't agree with this, but I'm going to just keep an eye on them because I want to know, even though I'm not going to comment and give my thoughts, because I've also tried that, don't do that. I want to see what I think in my head, and I want to see what I would comment. And that's how we all grow, because it's all well and good, like talking. You could talk for hours about all the stuff that you know and that you're really passionate about and that you really believe in, without understanding how anybody could possibly dispute what you're saying. And that's incredibly unhealthy. Like, you can't go through, and we all know, I mean, there's probably, everyone knows somebody that's like that, right? And it's just you just roll your eyes at it, right? So you just don't want to be like that. And this is, I think, how you develop that sense of, okay, people can have different opinions to me that do actually make sense.
Yes. And they do. People do. I think it's something that I like to do anyway, just for myself, when I can feel myself going into kind of a mindset of kind of righteousness. I just laugh at how how egoic and how entitled it can be for me to think that in a world with billions of people, no one can disagree. Like, that's fucking, I mean, that's exceptional. Right? And that's how we're training each other, ourselves and each other, to operate, especially on social media, where you're just so shocked that someone could possibly feel different about this huge issue. Right. So when you just start to kind of, I call it zooming out, when you just zoom out of your subjective experience just for a moment and just laugh at yourself, I think that can actually help you regulate your emotions in a time where you're reacting, to just kind of observe and be like, oh my goodness. Okay. All right. And it doesn't mean you have to accept anything. It doesn't mean you have to cross your own boundaries, but it's just accepting the reality of life, which is that people will disagree with you. And you don't have to engage with every person that does, but at some point you will have no choice but to. Is it not better to be equipped to be able to handle that situation, right? So those are the kinds of things that I think about often.
I love that. I love that thought. I often get people who will, you know, for example, in the world of diet culture, it will be like, have you seen that Khloe Kardashian's posted this new thing? And I'm like, I've kind of done the whole like calling out, resharing, all that stuff, but I'm like, at what point do we realize that Khloe Kardashian never asked to be some sort of role model in your, you know, in the way that you want her to be? So why are we then shocked and outraged of like, because I suppose I feel empathy. I feel empathy for these women who have been, you know, put into society. And, you know, we may not agree with the ads and we may, you know, find them very harmful, which we do, but we can still, that can still exist whilst also having empathy for the world that maybe they've grown up with in their life experience. But I do think it's, people just kind of want to, when you have a platform, people just want to see you perform. They're like, here's some material, go perform this material by sharing it on your story and being angry, because they just want to watch it. And I find that concept a bit weird.
Yeah, me too. I think it's actually very sinister, and dehumanization is something that I speak about quite a bit, because I think we are getting to that point now where just casually dehumanizing people is sort of normal, and we're used to seeing it on social media. And the more that you see something through repetition, it tells your brain that this is just normal, this is just how it is. But it's not, because some of the things that are said in comment sections, in threads, in people's DMs, amongst strangers, right? Which is, I mean, if you add that element, it just makes it even worse. Imagine if this was happening on the streets, it would be fucking carnage outside. If right? It's not normal.
It's awful. We don't speak to each other like human beings. We don't, but we've like stopped trying to make other people understand us. We just start screaming at each other now. It's no, like, when's the last time you saw a comment that was like, hello, what you've said is actually really harmful and this is why? Like, nobody does that. They're just like, oh, you're a dick. Like, that's literally all there is. And I'm like, stop this, because it just, it fuels the anger and it makes things worse. And like, I get it. We need an outlet. We're all angry. Like, I get it. But it's the difference between, and then people will say, oh no, but you know, it's not my place to educate someone. It's not my place to do this, that, and the other. And I understand that. Like, I understand that, and it's not, but you have to make a decision, right? Do you actually want to change the world, or do you just want to shout at people?
Right. Right.
Thoughts? Like, is that too harsh? That's how I feel anyway, but then I don't have other people's experiences. That's maybe just my own.
I'm glad you said that, because I don't think it's harsh at all. I think something that we need now more than ever is to be firm, and you can be firm and compassionate. This is really important. I think the extreme binary thinking has people thinking that it's an either or, that it's one or the other, because I understand when people say, I'm not here to educate, but at this point in time, it's become a script.
Yeah.
It's become a script that people say, and I have a few years ago, I found myself also doing this. When I didn't have a valid argument, I would turn on that. I'm not here to educate you. Yeah, no shit. It's because I can't fucking back up the argument that I've put forward. And someone has just asked a very simple question. Because that's why, again, people are leaning in self-censorship. Because you could ask a very simple question. What does this term actually mean? I'm quite confused. Or you might want to point out a contradiction. And because whoever's on the other side can't actually back up what they're saying, because we're in a world where it's like everyone's reading from a script, usually relating to social justice mainly, you know what you're going to get. It's going to be, I'm not here to educate you. And then it just becomes a complete pylon. And does that person learn anything? No. It's more likely that that individual is going to end up being really resentful. And this is what I think is dangerous, especially when we're talking about marginalized communities and people that actually need our support. The division is actually turning people into the very things that we're wanting to fight against. And this is serious. A lot of research and data will show you that the division is not just isolated to online. It's now in the real world, people that are being silenced just for asking the simplest questions, because they don't understand a concept, because everything is moving so fast. The definitions of things are changing so quickly. And someone will just ask a simple question. They'll get piled on online. They don't learn anything. They become even more resentful. And now they have some kind of confirmation that, you know, there's no fucking point. And once that happens over and over again and a million times, we're more polarized than ever, and no one learns a fucking thing. Yeah. So I'm glad that you said that, because I think we need to be more firm and realistic about what's happening.
This reminds me of when I last went home, I saw my parents. And I was talking, I can't remember what I was talking about, but I said something to my dad, and I was like, yeah, and it was just like gaslighting. And he was just like, what? He's like, what is that? And I'm like, oh my God, I've just spent so much time online that I just assume that people just know what this word means that I've just like thrown up. And to him, he's just like, what does that mean? But it's just, that for me was just like, oh God, like just because someone doesn't understand a concept, or just because someone, you know, it's not that they're like disagreeing with your feelings or invalidating how it made you feel. It's like they just genuinely have a totally different life experience. Like, I don't think my dad's ever been on Instagram in his... Oh, actually, no, he did. He did go on Instagram, and he made one Instagram post of him playing the piano wearing a horse's head, which summarizes my dad's character perfectly.
I love that.
Yeah. But like, it just, it really made... I laughed to myself, and... it does make me think of all these words that I guess, and the script thing resonates with me as well, because I know that there are certain like threads that you just like say, even when you're doing podcasts, or you know, if you're in a situation where you feel a little bit unsafe, you do kind of just revert to the script because you don't know what else to say.
Right. This is something that I did speak about in the open letter that I wrote. And for anyone that's wondering what it's called, it was called Why I'm Leaving the Cult of Wokeness. And you can find it if you just type it on Google. But it's something that I wrote because everything that I'm talking about, I'm not talking about it from, you know, my high horse and everyone needs to change. No, it's because I experienced this. I experienced this. And I saw myself in a way that I never thought I would see myself, which is the case for a lot of people. I mean, I've spoken to thousands of people at this point that have been through this. We all want to do the best that we can. We all want to contribute in the best way that we can. We all want to be as inclusive as possible. We want to make sure that no one is in harm's way. We want to make sure that we educate ourselves in the best way that we can. And all of those things are absolutely wonderful. But at some point in time, I don't know when exactly, things got very extreme. I think the past year especially, something happened in the past year, and I'm kind of looking into what that was and speaking to people, but I think something happened. And I think being on lockdown, people locked down all over the world, being on their phones, being on social media, it's made things very, very fucking intense. Mm-hmm. And also our lives are heavily politicized right now. It's actually astounding. Our lives, even the most personal parts of your life and who you are as a person, everything has become politicized. Mm-hmm. And with that comes activism, which is a wonderful thing, and comes social justice, which is an incredible thing. But then all of those things then have their extremes. And because we're in a time as well where everyone has an opinion, everyone has a platform to express that opinion. Even if you have 10 followers or 200, you still have a platform. You can share your thoughts. So there's just a lot of noise. There's a lot of confusion, and there's so many extremes, and there seems to be no middle ground. And with what I'm trying to do in the conversations I want to have, and the conversation we're all having now, is just reminding people there is a middle ground. You don't have to over-identify with being on the right or being on the left, or being pro or anti, or being for or against. More people are in the gray area. More people just don't fucking know. Everything's moving really quick. People don't quite understand it. People just trying to stay alive. The past year has just been mental for everyone. So I think it's just an invitation to the middle ground. And I think people are really desperate for that, because people are just very confused about what's going on. Yeah. You know, no one knows, is it safe for me to ask this? Is it safe for me to say this? Can I say this? Can I not say this? Even if you say something that is non-controversial, someone will find fault in it, you know? So people just start to detach, and they tell themselves, you know what, it's better if I just opt out completely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right?
We do when we edit our podcast. I mean, to be fair, we have got much better, but yeah. Initially we were like, oh, someone can twist this and then twist it back that way, and then they can make it. Yeah.
We were really bad. Yeah. I'm glad we don't do that anymore.
Me too.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
And you know what? Maybe it's actually really important for you to say this out loud on your podcast, so people understand that everyone's experiencing this.
Yeah,
it's not, because that's another thing about it, right? The way self-censorship works is that you think it's just you. So depending on what the situation is, you start to believe that you're the problem. Should I be thinking this way? It's not normal. Everyone's saying this one thing, right? Because again, the script, there is a social script. There's always one kind of narrative that people have to support. And if you're in the majority, you feel much safer, which is how we're hardwired anyway. If you're with your tribe and your community, your physical safety would have been, you know. But now we still have that same wiring from millions of years ago, but we're just now in the modern world. So it just manifests in a different and very interesting way. But it's such a relief when people hear things like this, you know, for people like you that have this platform, that have these public images, to be able to say, actually, I was censoring myself, and I maybe didn't even realize. I just wanted to do the right thing, you know, but actually inadvertently, it's maybe working against you because it's not allowing you to really be who you need to be in that moment. Mm-hmm. So it's just interesting how that journey works, but it happens to everyone. And I think recognizing it is one of the first steps to actually start to change it.
Should we do our quick fire round?
Okay, I've thought of one.
Okay, cool. So the way that this works for everyone listening, and also for you, Africa, is that so we'll take it in turns. So for example, I'll say my question first, and I'll count down. I'll go 3, 2, 1, and then you both say yes or no at the same time. And then we don't say anything else about that. We go round, and then at the end, we discuss all the questions.
Oh, amazing.
I love it. So you sit in discomfort for like a second of like, let me explain why.
Okay, can I start? Do you feel some relief when you hear or see other people slip up? 3, 2, 1.
Yes. Okay, should I do mine? Are there any opinions that you have which you still feel are way too controversial to post on social media on your platforms? 3, 2, 1.
Yes.
Yes.
Duh. Yes. Ooh. So many.
Okay.
So my question is, are you a fan of period sex? 3, 2, 1.
Yes.
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 That's a lot of yeses. That's awesome. I really enjoyed that.
That's great. Oh God. Okay. Right. We've got some great topics to quickly cover over. So Tara, remind everyone your question again.
Do we feel relief when we hear other people slip up?
Such a good question. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm so glad you both said yes as well, because it just, what we were just talking about had me thinking about like how we expect to always be perfect all the time. And then as soon as we see someone else slip up, we're like, yes, it's not just me that has the occasional blunder. It's great.
Yeah, it's almost like, and it's one of those seemingly small things that kind of makes a difference, because it allows you to humanize the person.
Yes. Again.
Especially when it happens with people that I didn't even realize I had on a pedestal in my head. I'm like, oh, like they're just like me, because I slip up as well. And I think it's reassuring for whoever might have me on a pedestal or whoever admires me to be like, oh, she's just normal. So I do think, yeah. But, and it, you know, it's not in a sinister way. It's not like an aha, you know, you want them to, no, it's just like, huh. Yeah. So I like it.
100%. Same with me. If I see or hear someone who's in my field doing a similar thing to me, and I'm like, oh my God, she's doing the same thing that I always do, or I've made that mistake too. Oh, so great. It's just, it, I guess it is from like a self-centered space of like, okay, that her action is making me feel better, but ultimately it's not from like, good, I'm glad you've messed up. It's just, it, like you say, it's opening, it's humanizing people. That's exactly what it is. Yeah,
you could then turn it around though as well, because I remember when we started really, really censoring all of our podcast episodes, it used to really annoy me. And then there was one time, and I'm not going to say which instance this was exactly, but I'll tell you what happened. So there was one time where Lucy, you said to me, Tara, do you not want to take this bit out? And I was like, no, I'm leaving it. And I left it in on purpose because I wanted to see if people would actually pull me up on it. And they did. And I got like a few messages on Instagram saying, hey, don't you think this was a bit like, don't you think this right. comment like reeks of internalized misogyny? And I was like, yeah, it does. And I said that. I said what I said. Mm. And as, you know, as soon as you pulled me up on it, Lucy, I was like, that was wrong. I shouldn't have said that. But left it in because we're not perfect and we're all good. Human. And we still, you know, we're on this journey of like, of discovery and all the rest of it. And it doesn't just go away from one second to the next, all of the stuff that you did think before. I don't know. I think it's great.
I'm so glad you did that though, because I also, that's a prime example though. If you're in your group, your echo chamber, your friendship circles, whatever, you do sort of like, you want to like cling and you want to protect. Mm. And you want to like, but then that you kind of just censor yourself, and also just like the people around you. You're like, wait, you shouldn't say that. We can't say that. Can we say that? Oh, and it creates that like fear amongst your immediate group,
yes.
which is what we've seen play out on the podcast. And it doesn't feel good. It feels gross. No. It feels horrible.
The last thing I want also is people to put me on a pedestal. Like, I don't deserve that either. Like, I've still made mistakes. Like, stop looking at me like the person that should say everything right all the time. It's not fair. And it's not right.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. You know what? I think your listeners are going to get so much from this, especially from what you're both sharing. Because I think, because obviously they listen to you, so there's a trust, they kind of feel like they know you. So I think it's really important for them to hear you say this. I love it.
Well, my question, what was my question? Oh yeah, do you have controversial opinions that you still share? So you both said you do have opinions that you still wouldn't feel comfortable sharing.
Mm-hmm.
Is that because you can't be bothered with like the potential backlash? energy, bandwidth?
So for me, I think, and I think this will be very useful actually, is that there's 100% a difference between censoring yourself, which is from a place of fear, where you feel, you know, that what you say is going to get you either cancelled or cast out of the community or ostracized or whatever the list of things might be, right? Or as I call it, virtual stoning, because that's what it seems like. It seems like a stoning session in the comment section. It's so weird. But there's a difference between self-censorship and having a social filter, okay? Having a social filter is really important because we can't just think we can say whatever the fuck we want to say with no consequences. That's not how it works, right? So having a social filter allows you to be mindful in your approach. I also refer to it as mindful speech sometimes. Understanding the difference, because you can still say something that is firm, something that is direct, something that is maybe not unpopular, and it can still be mindful. It can still be from an intentional place. In fact, that's where I think a lot of us need to be. Or you can just censor yourself as a default in any situation because of the fear that comes up of the perceived threat, right? So when I say there are controversial or unpopular things that I still keep to myself and I won't share publicly, yeah, that's absolutely the case, because there are a lot of controversial things happening in the world right now. And I have an opinion on some and I don't have an opinion on others. And not everything is meant to be shared in a public forum. I have people in my real life where we can just sit there on my couch and we can just fucking go. We can say anything, the most un-PC things. Yeah. And it's, oh, and it's my favorite thing ever. And, you know, the world will still spin. It's not the end, right? Mm-hmm. But I know that we're having those conversations from a place of curiosity, from a place of wanting to understand, from a place of confusion, from a place of just laughing at the absurd, whatever it is. But it's not supposed to be on a public forum. And I think we need to have those spaces in our relationships, which is why I always say when I talk about undoing self-censorship, my priority isn't so you can go online and say what you want. It's about your personal relationships. Can you even have the most controversial conversations with the people around you? At a dinner party, can you go around and say, everyone share your most unpopular thought and let's have a discussion? You should be able to do that, right? So, I do have very controversial things that I think that I keep to myself, but I have cultivated my personal spaces to be able to express them.
I love that.
I love what social you say about filter. The social filter. Yeah, that's great. Oh. That's exactly it. It's just like the stuff that I don't want to share online is just because I just like it's not worth pissing that many people off for no reason. It's dumb stuff, and it's like know your audience sometimes, right? Like just
that's it. What about you, Lucy? Do you have any?
I think I definitely do. Well, I do. Of course I do. But mine's more like the energy side. Like I can't be bothered. Like, for example, most of mine lie around fitness, I guess, in that because of diet culture, and that's exactly what my business is in, there is an expectation that I need to be anti-weight loss.
Right.
And I'm not anti-weight loss. I can't sit here and say, I'm a non-weight loss focused app. I don't give people fat loss tips, but that doesn't mean that I'm going to sit here and be like, you should never lose weight. Also, as like a straight size woman, like me being like, you should never feel like you want to lose weight. So yeah. I think people often feel surprised. And, you know, I suppose I do talk about it, but it's not something I like to discuss often because it just gets such a huge backlash from people within my community. But I believe in autonomy to do whatever the hell you want to do with your body. So if your decision is wanting to lose weight, just because it doesn't align with my business, just because it doesn't align with what I want to help women do via my platform, doesn't mean that it's wrong. But I have to say, I put myself in that corner because I followed the script of anti-diet camp. So I followed the script and it was like, intentional weight loss is wrong. No one should, you know, it should be, if you lose weight, it should be unintentional. And like, I'd said that stuff.
Yeah. And I, again, so refreshing to even hear you say this. And I have some friends that are in fitness that say the exact same thing because of the huge platforms that they now have. There's that pressure that comes with having to maintain a certain way of being. And it doesn't mean they're being fake or anything like that, but it just means they're withholding certain aspects that they would like to bring forward, or aspects that they realize that actually bringing this forward, it's just going to cause a whole load of fucking chaos, and it's really not worth it, to be honest. But what you're saying is really important, because again, when you think about the real world and real life application, there are billions of people around the world, and there are billions of people that, for whatever reason, and there might be for very serious health reasons, need to lose weight for very, very serious. And I've had people in my family that have had to do that in Zimbabwe, have had to do that, right? So everything is a case by case. You can't just blanket statement say you're anti-weight loss completely, because then I could come and say, okay, but with this specific individual that's experiencing this very specific thing, does that logic apply? No, a lot of the time it wouldn't. So I like that, because it speaks to that gray area.
Mm. And this is where the tagging thing really like helps my mind compute this now. Cause I'm like, it's not that weight loss is not in the anti-diet camp. It still can be, but like you can both accept that maybe, yes, you have been influenced by certain media sources and certain people, but also still want to do it. And that both those things can be true, and that doesn't make you weak or a bad person. So after your final question.
The last one. The last one was what exactly was it? Are you a fan of period sex?
Mm-hmm. Yes. And we both said yes.
I used to have a very short answer, but I used to have a lot of stigma around it. A lot of stigma. And I think a lot of people still do. But then when I started my sexual wellness company and just started speaking to people all over the world about how they experience sex, about their bodies, especially when it comes to women and how they've been shamed, I just started to look at it a little bit differently, to understand that actually I get to experience my body in the way that I want to. And if I'm with someone that I trust, someone that I'm deeply connected with, someone who also feels comfortable, then why do I have to consult the rest of the world before I have a shag? Sorry, no, it's not happening.
Absolutely right. I think it's incredibly sad that the world has told so many women to be so ashamed of something that happens to them every month that they themselves find it gross. Imagine finding something that your body does naturally every month gross, rather than thinking how beautiful and wonderful it is, and actually it should be seen as something that's really empowering to be able to have sex on your period. And I mean, aside from the fact that it feels fucking great, some people say it doesn't.
Great. And it's good for you.
Yeah, it's just great.
It's good for you.
It's great.
So if you take anything away from this, have period sex. Oh, this conversation's been so amazing. It's been so good. Thank you so much, Africa.
Yeah, it's been absolutely brilliant to have you on, and I've loved every second of it. So
me too.
Everybody listening, if you do not follow Africa on Instagram already, it is at Africa Brooke, right? Just no dots, no dashes.
With an E.
With an E. Exactly. So head on over to her Instagram. And if you want to read the open letter, it's in the link in her bio as well. So you can check it out from there. And any of her other services and her website are all there as well. So that's it from us. And we'll speak to you all very soon.
See you next week.
Bye.